Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors. Welcome to my little corner of the internet, the Midnight Garden. I am your host, Leto Sasquatch. I invite you to join me here in between the spinach and the cranberries, and we will talk of things great and small, important and not so important. Spinach and cranberries, they go together pretty well. I've had to actually, here recently, been turned on, as they say, to the combination of the bitter spinach and the sweet fruit. So I just had strawberries, cranberries, apples. I think that's it. And then it comes with a nice vinaigrette, and it's very nice indeed, and usually pretty expensive. But I like it, and they use some nuts, too, like pecans. Something salty, so you got the bitter and the sweet and the salty, and it's all in raw in one. And I guess you have to say the vinaigrette is sour too, so that would be all four of the basic taste buds that they used to teach us back in school. I think it's that's been revised several times since then. But once again, thank you for joining me. I'm speaking to you from my vehicle, my Buick LeSabre tonight. I've been driven from my apartment by intense anxiety. And so let me tell you how that came to be. You probably hear some, I don't know, maybe you don't hear in the background some kind of rumbling. I'm sitting in a car with a heater on. And at some point it'll get nice and toasty in here, and I'll go ahead and turn that off and not be, because to run the heater, you got to be wasting petroleum. And I do want to, since this is all about my own irrational fears, I don't want to add to the greenhouse gases any more than I absolutely have to. But for now, maybe it's a nice counterpoint that the kind of rumbling behind it makes maybe some white noise. Maybe it'll help you get to sleep if my show doesn't help you do that. Here's where we're at. A couple of years ago, I made the acquaintance of one of the ladies from the neighborhood. She came down. She hung around the building because she has a daughter who lives here, like 5-6-year-old daughter, and she was looking for odd jobs to do, and we struck up a friendship, and then kind of became a little bit more than that. But so what? It became an issue because she constantly needed money, as indeed I do, as indeed all the people in this neighborhood basically do. And I wanted to help out, and I frequently gave her money, and I frequently gave her more than I should, because it was put me in trouble a number of times as far as, you know, maybe not being able to pay my own bills. But I started to notice a pattern, and this is naive mud toe, ramshackle, is that the word, roughshod, I don't know what it is, in this neighborhood where there's a lot of sort of activity that I'm not used to. You hear tell about it, you know, you see it in the after school specials and whatnot. But what I noticed was that this young lady, when she said she needed help or something, she always wanted cash. And, you know, she'd say, I want, or I need money for my daughter's school pictures. Yeah, I need $10 for my daughter's school pictures. And then the thing is, she'd come over and do something at the apartment and, you know, wash my dishes or something, which really wasn't quite worth $10, but, you know, I wanted to help. But it always, I might have liked to have some pictures too. You know, I know she's one of my neighbors. She said, bring the form over, and maybe I'll kick in a little bit, you know, see what it is. I'll write you a check, and you know, I'll just write it directly to the picture people, and we'll just pay it that way. And no, that wouldn't work. She had to have the cash, and that's what I noticed time and time again. You know, I would say, like, you know, I'll buy you the bus passes. I'll take you to the pharmacy, and you do what I can to get, you know, what it is you need at the pharmacy. No, had to have the cash. So I'm starting to, you know, slow mud toe's brain, you know, starting to crank, you know, something is amiss here. and became more amiss when she started having me drop her off in alleys. You know, I wanted to get drop off at the pharmacy to get her medicine, and I give her whatever she needed for her medicine. She said she needed. And I said, okay, take me. She said, take me to this place. And I would, it was an alley, and I dropped her off there. I said, okay, this has to end. And she didn't want to take no for an answer. You know, she kept showing up at the door asking if she could do odd jobs around the house for money. And it was difficult for me to say no. And the number of times, even when I knew. What it was that was happening with the cash, it's in some ways I just couldn't stop myself. I couldn't be that guy who says no. And then things really got. She started. She would show up at my apartment in the middle of the night, like 4 a.m, and knock on the door. And if I didn't come to the door, She would come around in the back and knock on my bedroom window, which is really quite a risk because in the back the apartments aren't numbered. So she had to do some math to figure out which one of them was mine. And I guess a good thing she did that correctly, and not so good for me. But in any case, there were one or two late night shouting matches. I don't think I could call them shouting matches because I was the one doing all the shouting. And it takes a lot to push me to the point where I am shouting at the top of my voice. And I was about to say she got me there. Actually, it was the situation that got me there. And I was the one who got myself into the situation. She was practicing a survival skill, which is... for a narcotic addict, which I presume is what she was, that's as I believe Bill Hicks once said, drugs are very important to a drug addict. So she's just doing what she needs to do, and I was the one who let it go on when I shouldn't have. So if there's any blame to be placed, it's probably more fairly placed on me than on her. Well, anyway. Fate intervened in my favor. The young lady got herself arrested and sent to jail, and she was in jail for a while and halfway house for a while. Well, rehab first, and then halfway house. And at the halfway house, she started having a visitation with her daughter here. So I started seeing her around again, and before too long, she was stopping by the apartment to see if she could wash the dishes or mop the floor or whatever. And she's doing well. I mean, she'd put on some weight. She was fantastically thin before, way too thin, and she looked better. She sounded better. She talked and had a lot of hope for the future. She wanted to get her own place and be able to have her daughter visit her there. Then about a month now, maybe 2 months, she walked out of the halfway house, and she's been just sort of back in the neighborhood, sleeping where she can find a spot. And of course, back at my door, trying to get her fives and tens and twenties when she needs them. And she's been, and let me do my quick math. Yeah. 6 times in the past 36 hours, she's knocked on my door, and it has to stop, and I am the only one who can stop it. I'm going to have to have the intestinal fortitude to do this. It's something I've really never done before. All of the unhappy, unpleasant, potentially dangerous situations I've ever been involved in with other people, fate intervened in some way to say that I didn't have to be the one to say, okay, this ends now, and don't darken my door again, and then to stick to that, to every time, because I'm quite sure it's going to take more than once to make this happen. It's really got me quite scared. The magnitude of this is awesome. And it's, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know if I can do it. And it's last, just, it was like a half an hour before the show started. She's still at the house, and I'm trying to make my desires known. You need to leave. And the words are just sticking in my throat, and I can't do it. And then, finally it comes out as an angry thing. Not as angry as I was, last I wasn't shouting angry, but I'm still angry. And, I need you to leave. I need you to leave. And she's crying, and I'm upset. And finally she gets up walks out of the apartment. But, I fully expect I'm going to see her again at least one more time tonight. And that is extremely anxiety producing. I was sitting there trying to get ready for the show, and I'm just waiting for the knock at the door. Just waiting. So I know it's coming. Any time now that knock on the door is going to come, it's going to come in the middle of the show, and how am I going to handle that? So finally, I just bailed out of my own apartment. I came out here to the car, so unfortunately, there isn't going to be any video of this week's episode because it's in there and I'm out here. But I feel better out here in the car. I thought, I've been, since this has been going on, I find I have been delaying coming home from work or from my errands or whatever it is I'm doing. I'm not in a hurry to come home because, the knock at the door is going to be coming, and then the confrontation. And am I going to be able to say no as I should? Because I'd like to believe now. Because that was the first few times that she came and seeing me. I thought, well, this is because she's still in the rehab, and this is, legitimately she needs something for groceries or whatever she is in the halfway house. And then I found out that she wasn't at the halfway house anymore. That made me suspicious. And then now it's exactly the same pattern as you've seen before. That's just need this, just need that. And, if I say, when I've said no, because last night, first time she stopped by, this is out of the sex, let's see, there was the no's were 3, 4, and 6. And the yes's were 1, 2, and 5. So first time she I said yes. Second time I said yes. Third time I said no. I can't, I just can't get, this far into. I don't have those kind of financial resources. And fourth time I said no, and that was this morning as I was on my, she came and intercepted me as I was on my way to the car to go to work. And both of the no's, 3 and 4, I had to be a real prick before she would get the message. And that, cause she'll just keep saying, she'll say, please, please, can you do it? And you can maybe do a little less, but I need it for this. I need it because there's this person I owe money to. She keep sort of shifting, trying different tacks to get to me because she's gotten to me in the past. I found the only way I can interdict it is to be a bastard. And that's really, it's really hard for me. Now, I've been told in other circumstances. I'm going to go ahead and turn the engine off. I don't know if you heard any change here. Oh, my light's on. The whole world can see that I'm in here now. There's lots of activity out here on the street for quarter after midnight. Something difficult for me to get used to. It's just the sheer amount of activity. So not just during at night, but during the day. It seems like there's always somebody out front of the building, and I'm constantly being observed coming and going from my apartment, and I don't like that. But anyway, I guess maybe I feel better because I have a more or less 360-degree view. I can see if I'm being approached, you know, by the young lady or by anyone else. But you know, at some point, I gotta go back. I go back to sleep. I gotta be at work early tomorrow. Not early. I get up at 8, and I'll be on the road by 9:30, and well, 9:15, and at work by 10. And then when I after work, I'm working 10 to 3, and then after that, I got to ask them. Well, see, that won't work because I don't have my real phone. I keep getting messages that my phone is running out of data. And I don't know because I haven't downloaded anything that I know of, you know, but then I know so little about this phone. I could have, you know, pushed any button and, you know, started downloading stuff and not really known about it. But I noticed it's not, I mean, this is a loaner phone. Sprint still has my phone. My phone I took to them because I wasn't getting a sound off of it, which made it kind of useless as a phone. So I took it to them and they couldn't figure it out. They said they could order parts and all this, and they've had it for 2 weeks now. So I'm using their dummy phone, not dummy phone, it actually works, their loaner phone, and I keep getting messages that it's running out of data. So I'd really rather not. This the store I took it to, there's only one store in town that has, well, I think there were two, that have a workshop there, your repair station where they actually work on the phones. I really don't want to drive all the way there again until, you know, I'm getting ready to pick up my original phone. So I may just be out of Facebook and email for a while, just to be able to do it, make sure I get to the library early and get all that business done. To that, you see, I noticed I diverted that subject. I don't. I was just thinking about, I'm sitting outside of my apartment and just thinking about going back in there is giving me anxiety. I'm thinking about, you know, going to sleep and just any time I hear a sound. When I was walking out to the car, I got my Blog Talk warning, it was, you know, 9 minutes to go, and I about jumped out of my skin. I heard that, you know, that female voice. Oh, you know, I don't know. Anxiousness is just a wonderful thing. The things, I have to admit, most of the things that I'm anxious about, you know, never come to pass. You know, so you're worried about it and it doesn't happen. So you see, you're worried about it, but so then other times, the girl shows up at your door 6 times in 36 hours. And I don't know, maybe she'll stay away. Sometimes she does. Last night she did. After a no, she stayed away all night and intercepted me in the morning. So I suppose there's a possibility. But it has to stop at the front porch. And this is the part that's hard for me. I just have to not let her in the apartment. Because that's the other part of it. Let her in the apartment. Am I going to be able to get her out of the apartment? Because that was my concern tonight. She came in as, you know, it's getting close to time for the show, and, you know, she doesn't want to leave. And I have to amp up the anger a bit to convince her that she's not going to get any money and she any more money, and she needs to move. And incidentally, this is not the only person in the neighborhood who hits me up for money. It's by far the most frequent, and she has a unique approach where she's always, you know, offering to do chores for me. Now that the chores aren't, you know, really not doing enough chores to justify, you know, the amount of money I'm giving her. But again, I want to help. Most people, the approach is they ask for the $10 or $5 or whatever it is. And they say, yeah, I'm getting my check on Monday. It's probably the most common story. I'm getting my check on Monday. I pay you back. And of all the money that I have loaned out in that way, in the 3.5 years that I have been living here in this apartment complex, I think I have received $1 back. one lady who needed, I can't remember what she needed the dollar for. Let's see, I loaned her a dollar, and 3 days later, she stuffed it through my mail slot. The dollar paid me back. And that is the only money I've ever loaned out that I've gotten back in my time here. And I've tended to blame the place. And I've tried to get placed, you know, I tried to get the agency to put me somewhere else. I have not been successful at that. So I've come to the conclusion that, okay, this is it. Until I can afford, you know, to rent my own place, this is it. This is where I am. I need to make the best of it. And the part of making the best of it is not to throw my money around in that way. And that's now that where this we just had. I was at church on Wednesday night, and they have a church, and then they have a community meal, which is actually a free meal for homeless people. And I participated. I have my own free meal and some good fellowship with a lot of people. In fact, met a lady who gave me a bunch of extra stuff she had in the food pantry that she wasn't going to use. So now I'm loaded down with food pantry stuff, and I'm trying to make sure I can eat all this stuff because I don't throw away, you know, it was a gift. But see, that's things like that happen, and you hear, you know, the gospel reading is about the you know, being you know, feeding the poor, and you know, to the rich man will never enter heaven's portals and all that stuff. And then, you know, and so I hear all that, and I agree with it, but then, you know, I become upset when someone's hitting me up for money. And then the other part of it is, you know, there's a gas station nearby, our nearest gas station here. I don't often use it because there's never been a time I've used it that I haven't been panhandled when I was there. And so all this esoteric stuff is in my head about helping your fellow man and all that. But, you know, I'll run like hell from a homeless person. And this crack addicted or whatever it is, she went up for heroin. She claims the heroin wasn't hers, but and she's a sweet person, which is why it's difficult to say no to her. But I feel like I have to start because I think that the kindness to your fellow man ends where you are putting yourself in danger, or where I am putting myself with the possibility of not being able to pay my own bills. Then you flop that over to the other side. You know, Jesus said, you know, just throw everything aside and follow me and don't worry about it. So there's this plan. I flop back and forth trying. Anyway, I know through all of this, I know that I'm being taken advantage of. So part of me would like to say, you know, the whole thing about helping your fellow man you get excused from that when you know the other person is taking advantage of you. But is that right? Does it really work that way? I feel a heavy obligation to err towards self-care. And I just ran out of gas on that thread there. I was thinking of very seriously this morning after I was accosted this morning and I had the number four no. So 1 and 2 were yes, 3 and 4 were no, 5 was yes, 6 was no. So after number 4 no, I was driving away thinking, I have to get out of this place. It's the last thing I ever do. I'm trying to think in my head how I could possibly not be here anymore. And I really couldn't think of it. And then these same thoughts come drifting back of who's actually the, you know, the wounded party and the needy party. So I come out and sit in my car so that I can talk to you folks and try and work through my anxiety and I haven't been terribly successful. I'm still fearful of this night, and I'm fearful the next night. I'm fearful the following night, because I'm not going to be at my folks' place until Monday evening. And it's like the only place these days where I get a good night's sleep, because I know nobody's going to be knocking at my window out there. So I sleep like a baby, and I'm certainly looking forward to that. But that's 3 days in the distance and 3 days I have to get through. And knowing, gosh, it's hard for me to imagine that 3 days are going to go by with no confrontation whatsoever, with no knock at the door or at the window whatsoever. So if I've decided that not getting her money is the right thing to do, then I need to have the courage of my convictions. I need to do that. And I need to stick by it. That's something that's always been very hard for me, because I always think about situations. You know, I see other sides and maybe other ways that would be, you know, more like the path of least resistance. Things would be easier for me to do, an easier way to get out of this, than to stand up and confront and say no to this woman 5 or 10 or 20 times or whatever it takes. It would be an accomplishment beyond anything I have on my resume right now, I think, is to stop this, to deflect myself from this destructive path, to place my feet in the other direction. I definitely think I'm going to have to take a run around the block when this show is over. Actually, you know, I'm breaking state law right now, because you're not supposed to be on your cell phone even if the car isn't moving. And I've got two because I don't have my seatbelt on. You're supposed to have your seatbelt on once you get in the car, even if it's not moving. So I'm a 100% scofflaw. And how can I say I'm any better than this this woman who's after me to help her, calm her drug cravings. So I just got the 90-second warning. Again, sorry, no video of the show this week. I'll try and get back to that next week. Also, best wishes out to Chief Iggy, who hasn't been feeling too well this week. Thank you for listening to my prolonged rant this evening. This is the way the shows get sometimes. Hopefully tomorrow we'll be able to find something that's a bit more applicable to those of you out there listening. I think that's all I got to say. Please tune in next week for more of the Adventures of Mud Toe in the Midnight Garden. Thanks once again, and have a pleasant good evening.